Namaste, Jai Hind. You're watching or listening to another edition of the ANI podcast with Smita Prakash. This episode is being filmed in Bengaluru, Karnataka. The state goes to polls in the second and third phase, which is in April and May this year. The results will be out in June. My guest today is Dr. C.N. Manjunath. He's fighting the election on a BJP ticket, though he's the son-in-law of the former Prime Minister of India, Mr. Devegowda, who is the patriarch of the JDS. Dr. C.N. Manjunath is fighting from Bangalore Rural against D.K. Suresh of the Congress. Now, what makes this contest interesting is that D.K. Suresh is the brother of the current Deputy Chief Minister of Karnataka, D.K. Shivkumar. And Dr. Manjunath's brother-in-law is the former Chief Minister of Karnataka, H.D. Kumaraswamy. And as I said before, Dr. Manjunath's father-in-law is the former Prime Minister of India, Devegowda. That isn't the only thing that's interesting. Both the contestants, D.K. Suresh of the Congress and Dr. Manjunath, belong to the powerful Vokaliga community. Thank you very much, Dr. Manjunath, for being part of the podcast. I'm looking forward to this conversation, especially so because you're such an accomplished doctor, a physician, and now you are in making an entry into electoral politics. So I want to know about your story. Why did you decide to get into electoral politics?
No, I'm a cardiologist. I worked as a cardiologist for 35 years at Asia's largest cardiac institute called Sri Jayadev Institute of Cardiovascular Sciences and Research at Bangalore. And I held the position of director of this institute for 18 years. So during this period, the government institution, mind you, so it has recorded 500% growth. And the institute bed strength was increased from 300 to 2,000 beds exclusively for cardiac care. That makes it one of the largest heart care destination in Southeast Asia. So I coined three slogans for myself. I literally practiced these three slogans. That is, treatment first, payment next. Life is more important than the file. And humanity is priority. And this affordable cardiac healthcare model was not just restricted to Bangalore. We realized better to take this affordable cardiac healthcare under a public platform to the other parts of Karnataka. So we established and commissioned 400-bedded hospital, Jayadeva Institute of Cardiac Hospital at Mysore. Then another 370-bedded cardiac hospital at Kalaburgi. Which is 650 kilometers from here. In between, we also set up some satellite centers in other parts of Bangalore. So what happened, I retired from the services of Jayadeva Institute on January 31st. So post-retirement, there were...
Which year? This year?
This year. Okay. So January 31st, I retired from the institute service on this year only. So, post-retirement, what happened, there were a lot of felicitations across the state. Bangalore, and then in different parts of Bangalore, Mysore, Kalaburgi, and there were a lot of invitations for felicitation from other parts of Karnataka. So, in these felicitation meetings, a lot of people started suggesting, you have completed your innings, even your tenure, extended tenure also you have completed. And you have brought some reforms in a public heart institute. And also you have turned around the face of that hospital. And you have got such a great administrative skill apart from being accomplished cardiologist. So your services should not be, your contributions and your ideas should not be restricted to only state of Karnataka. And it is better if you do something similarly at national level. So at the same time, these elections were notified for Lok Sabha. So then, there were a lot of media stories that it is better if Dr. Manjunath contests for Lok Sabha election. So then the political parties have picked up my name. So my entry into politics is accidental. I never dreamt of entering politics any time because I have dedicated myself to my profession and to this cardiology institute.
Dr. Manjunath, you're a self-made man, and you've got expertise in a field where you didn't have godfathers. You did it completely on your own. But now you're entering a field, and that too, a field where there's so much of competition and the space is very limited. Also, your success will not depend solely on your talent. There are many factors.
Correct.
So, and also you'll always be known as Mr. Devegowda's son-in-law, Mr. Kumaraswamy's brother-in-law. At this stage in life, when you have already got so many achievements, is it not going to sit awkwardly that you'll be known by a relative's accomplishments rather than your own?
No, as far as my professional achievement is concerned, it's purely my own talent, my own dedication, my own commitment. Although I was, although I am coming from a political family, I stayed away from politics during all these last 35, 40 years. So, because I did not get any attachment to politics. Now, of course, now I am contesting from Lok Sabha election. That means I am in politics. But here what is happening, the selection of the party and the selection of the constituency, it was purely decided by high command of both the parties. So I had no role to play in that. And so that's how it has.
But why the BJP?
No, what has happened, that is the, that's what they have decided. Because first of all, I was not keen on contesting. And so they, both the parties, because the BJP high command has spoken to my brother-in-law Kumaraswamy. Then Kumaraswamy came and discussed with me, and also there was a lot of other BJP MLAs from this constituency. They came and had a discussion with me. It is better if you contest from BJP.
Your contestant is a very sharp politician. He also comes from a political family. His brother is the deputy chief minister, and they both fight elections in a very tough manner. They don't take any prisoners. Whereas you are a gentleman candidate, how are you going to fight the rough and tumble?
Yeah, certainly it is a tough battle, and it is a political battle. So what has happened, if you look at the mathematics of 2019 election, So the sitting member of the parliament from Congress has won that seat. So in 2019, it was JDS supporting Congress, and the BJP was contesting on its, solo. So, although BJP was contesting alone, they have secured quite a good number of, healthy votes. 6.7 lakhs, the BJP candidate in 2019, when contested alone, They have secured 6.7 lakh votes. And now, JDS is with BJP. So, mathematically, we are ahead.
So, it's not the candidate, what you're saying, it's the alliances which get the votes.
Because BJP and JDS have a strong base in this Bangalore rural constituency. In some three pockets, BJP is strong. In another five pockets, the JDS is strong. So, both JDS and BJP workers are working with a lot of harmony, and there is a lot of enthusiasm.
But D.K. Suresh is, it's going to be a prestige battle for D.K. Shivkumar to get his brother elected. His brother elected, got elected last year when there was such a Modi wave. He was the only one who got elected. So it's not as if, and then the Congress is in power in the state. So a very uphill task, would you say?
Yes, because any election is always challenging. That is the reason it is called election. The very definition of election means there is a contest and there are some challenges. And see what happens, particularly, I have toured all these 8 assembly segments in the last 18-19 days. There is a very good response. A lot of people are welcoming me and they are telling, it's good, you have decided to contest. We are very happy to vote for you. And you go to any nook and corner of this state, and not only from this Bangalore rural constituency. At least in every village, there are at least 10 to 15 cardiac patients which have been treated by us. So they have that gratitude factor is also has given some momentum. Of course, that alone is not going to be a game changer. That alone is not going to take me to the victory post. But certainly, the party strength is good, both the parties, this thing. And Narendra Modi's charisma is there. See, another interesting thing, there is a difference between your assembly election and Lok Sabha election. Mm. The parties which have won assembly election, they have lost in Lok Sabha election. That is the scenario. That's how the common man looks from that angle. Mm. The perspective for Lok Sabha election is different from the assembly elections.
But the Congress is fighting, it's fighting very hard in Karnataka simply because it's one of the few states that it is in power. So it's like I said, you know, when you fight an election, you have to get into your competitor's mind space to understand what is clicking for him. And for him, what is clicking is that he has the support of his brother. And his brother is seen as somebody who can not just deliver in this state, he can deliver in other states also. The Congress High Command sends him even till Himachal Pradesh.
Correct, correct.
To save governments and things. You think he won't do that for his brother?
No, certainly. In fact, he's campaigning himself. First time I was told he's visiting apartments, he's visiting voters. So they have taken seriously, and there is no issue about it. But our cadres are also equally serious, and they have taken up this seat as a prestigious constituency.
The Chief Minister said you're a white-collared politician. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that?
No, no. I think because all through my career, why I am liked by, I am liked universally by all party people. Now, of course, because I'm contesting from BJP, as the BJP JDNC Alliance, some people for political reason, yes, they may not be liking, but by heart they are liking me.
Oh, by heart they like. Yeah. You chose that very carefully.
Yeah, yeah, by heart they are liking me. And see, we have taken this, election seriously. Mm. Certainly, they are doing their job. Mm. Even the former Prime Minister Devegowda's influence is very much there in this constituency. Mm. Then former Chief Ministers Yediyurappa and Kumaraswamy, they have done a lot during their period. So all these are going to be contributing factors for my victory. See, during my tenure of 18 years, I have told and I have truly, literally practiced my VIPs to the hospital are not politicians, not ministers, MLAs, MPs. My VIPs to the hospital are farmers, poor people and laborers and those who are not affordable. Mm. So that is the reason. So in fact, I was very much attached to these poor people and the lower middle class and the middle class for them, because government grants alone was not sufficient to run this facility to so generously. I have roped in about 45 to 50 charitable organization, and also I have roped in about 50 to 60 philanthropists and donors, and I have built up a poor patient corpus fund of nearly 150 crores. The interest generated was given to this thing. So, I have practiced in such a way, no patient has gone untreated for the want of money. Whether they have money, no money, whether they have documents, no document, whether they have insurance, no insurance, everybody was treated. Because heart, when gets into an attack, heart attack cannot wait for all those documents, correct, cannot wait for all those formalities.
The file later, you said.
Yeah, yeah. So, so I believe in only one. As far as I am concerned, there is only one community, that is humanity. Mm. So in that, so because I am so much connected with the poor people and middle class, that white collar definition doesn't suit. Mm. So because for me, white collar means kindness. Mm. For me, white collar means generosity. So kindness makes the person most beautiful, however one may look.
Okay. You spoke about, making affordable cardiac care is something that you have pursued all your life. Now, you are doing it as an individual, and there are several healthcare professionals I know of who in an individual capacity are doing it. Some institutions are doing it. But, you know, with the kind of population we have, it's a huge challenge. Even a country like America cannot provide affordable healthcare to a large section of their population. Every country tries its best, but, you know, like the wait times to, you know, get even a dialysis is not easy. But in our country, we have managed to some extent. But why is affordable healthcare so inaccessible to large section of our population?
See, 65% of deaths in India is due to lifestyle diseases. And 30% of the healthcare is provided by the public sector, that is by the government. 70% of the healthcare is still
in the cracks. They fall between the cracks.
No, is given by private agents.
But that's not enough. Yeah,
that's not enough. So the need of the hour is to make this healthcare affordable to the cross section of the society. So this is where we have to bring lot of changes. Of course, we have Ayushman Bharat scheme.
Yeah, that's good.
So that is providing healthcare to those below poverty line, right? But Ayushman Bharat need to be strengthened. There are many procedures which have been left out in the Ayushman Bharat scheme, and the package rates are not yet revised. So as a result, in fact, at least package rate has to be revised so that many private hospitals will take this scheme. See, what is happening, because the package rates are not revised, probably is likely to be revised. Certainly, it is going to be revised. If the private hospital do not take this scheme forward, because now they are hesitant, it is true, because the package rates are not meeting the actual cost. So now the entire load is falling on the government hospitals.
Yeah.
So when too much of load is falling on the government hospital, somewhere down the line, there will be a burnout syndrome that's set in many government hospitals, and the quality also suffers to some extent. So to make this affordable healthcare accessible, so we have to strengthen the existing hospital with more manpower, with and also some administrative reforms has to be brought in, like for example, delegation of power, decentralization. So that's how we should, because we have many medical colleges today. In India, we are now close to 780 medical colleges. So maybe about 6 years back, there were only 380. Now it is 780. So now we have to strengthen those medical colleges so that everybody gets a good healthcare.
A couple of questions that come to mind. BJP manifesto says that above 70, Ayushman Bharat will be extended. So that has come as a huge
relief
to many people, because there are many who, you know, want their companies to extend medical care, not just for the family, but for their parents also. It's something that everybody is telling their companies, please include. Because basically, you're one stroke or one heart attack away from total wipe out of your savings. Once you get into a hospital, a middle class family is wiped out with just one issue, whether it is a brain related or heart related issue, you're wiped out.
Or even kidney for that
kidney
matter,
for
cancer.
That. Yeah. So your cancer is, of course, a complete wipe out. Middle class care for cancer. Now, this the manifesto also talks about cancer care also, that, you know, they will be screening. They're going to help with women in screening for that. So, for cervical cancer. So, I just wanted to know from you that these are steps which the BJP promises that it will take. But can it be delivered? For example, you have more 70% if you are saying, 70 and above, if it is included in Ayushman. Administratively, can it be delivered?
Yeah, now what is happening, the budgetary allocation for Ayushman Bharat at this point of time is about 27,000 crores. So that need to be increased.
Yeah.
So it is possible. See, Indian budget size, Indian government, the budget size is somewhere around 45 lakh crores. So giving another maybe few crores, few thousands of crores is not a big thing. So certainly including senior citizens under Ayushman Bharat is a really progressive step. It is a healthy step. So, and most important is the medical colleges because they have to get a teaching, I mean, they have to get clinical material for teaching the medical students. So people should also look at, because the mindset of our people is only they have to go to corporate hospital, five-star hospitals and all. So they don't realize that even the medical colleges are providing all this care at an affordable cost.
I don't know,
but doctor. It's not uniformly.
Yes.
I mean,
the quality is. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I understand. This is where probably we have to bring all the stakeholders, particularly.
See, you take, suppose I take my parent to a hospital and then they say, this stent costs this much, this stent costs this much. What is the first thing that we are going to say? Okay, put the best one. That is where all kind of malpractices come in, doctor.
Yeah, that's correct. See, there is commercialization in all walks of life in
correct.
India today.
Yes.
So, for example, cost of the stent, which was somewhere around 1 lakh or 70,000 way back in, has come down to 30,000. They have capped the same BJP government when Mr. Anand Kumar was the Minister for Chemicals and Fertilizers, is brought down. But the package rates, I agree, has remained. So, there is a need to some extent, regulate the cost of these procedures, overall cost of the procedure. I mean, scientific method should be adopted.
I understand that, you know, there are market forces at play. So, one shouldn't expect that everything should be the same. If you have different kinds of ketchups, you can have different kinds of stents also, I guess.
Now, cost of the stent remains same.
Everything else that comes, the package deal.
Yeah, the package, I mean, continues to remain same.
So, the other question which came to mind after you spoke was about the medical colleges. The capitation fees that one has to pay, medical college is literally putting a child through medical college has become absolutely backbreaking for middle class families. It's out of reach, firstly. First, it begins with the coaching classes. As soon as a child shows any aptitude, it becomes... the parent is happy, but the parent is also, how am I going to provide for this, right? And this has been the case when I was in school, and this is continues to be the case even now. And in a country which is providing and which is bringing out doctors, which the entire world looks for Indian doctors to come and practice in their country. And we are seen as people who do that. How can we improve the system of our colleges?
Yeah. See, now what has happened, the number of government colleges have increased. The number of government seats have increased. So, number of government seats in private colleges also has increased. Now, there is a more opportunity for our talented people to get into medicine. Even number of postgraduate seats. For example, maybe 5 years back, number of postgraduate seats were somewhere around 30,000. Now, it's about 90,000. And number of MBBS seats, which was around 60,000, now it's 1,20,000 today. I think now it has opened up. So, now particularly in the last 3 years, there has been almost 100% increase or more than 100% increase in the number of postgraduate seats and also the MBBS seats.
Is there fairness in giving permission for medical colleges to open in some states and not in the others? Is it a fair system? Is it fair play?
Well, now what is happening, there are more earlier, maybe up to 2017-18, there were more medical colleges in southern India.
Yeah.
Now it is shifted to north and northeast. Mm-hmm. I agree there was small distribution of medical colleges. Now it is getting properly distributed.
Are you in favor of NEET or against it?
So now what is happening, if you look at this NEET, the ranking... I mean, whatever the ranking limit they have, this thing. People with 5% marks also, they have got seats now because number of seats have increased.
Doc, I want to ask you is that if you are elected and you get into the parliament, what would you like to do as a parliamentarian? What is it that you want to contribute to society?
See, number one, we have to strengthen our healthcare system. You have to strengthen the existing healthcare system with more manpower, and also for example, we have AIIMS. Because now one of the biggest challenges in a government sector is, lot of posts are vacant. Mm. So we need to fill up this post, number one. And also there has to be decentralized delegation of power. Mm. Because in my opinion, the buildings and equipments alone will not deliver the good treatment. Mm-hmm. So workplace wellness has to be there. You have to create a great working atmosphere. This can come through. And most important, our focus should move from construction to creation of post. They spend a lot of money on construction. But when it comes to creation of post, they back out. So that balance has to be corrected.
Since I have a cardiologist in the room, I have to ask you about these sudden heart attacks which are happening post-COVID. Young people, passing away in the gym, while at work, in their 20s, in their 30s. Is it related to COVID? Is it related to lifestyle problems? What is the reason this is happening?
35% of deaths in India is due to heart attack related disease. And another very painful thing is 30% of heart attack that occurs in India is below 45 years of age. Young and middle-aged Indians are becoming vulnerable to this heart attack and its related disease. Definitely it's a lifestyle diseases. And if you look at last 15 years, there is nearly 22% increase in the prevalence of heart attack among the youngsters. We have our own study, what is called premature heart attack or heart attack in the young study. So in the last 7 years, we have studied close to 6,000 young heart attack patients. 51% were smokers. And see, if you look at the risk factors from young heart attack group to the old heart attack, there were less diabetes, less high blood pressure among the youngsters. 51% were smokers and 17% had a strong family history. Mm. So if somebody in the family has suffered an heart attack before the age of 50, such family members are more prone for heart attack. Mm. Interestingly, 25% those who suffer heart attack in the younger population do not have any conventional risk factors. No smoking, no diabetes, and they are fit and fine. And no family history. Here comes the role of stress. Stress today is considered to be a new tobacco. So they have professional stress. They have a stress of, they're thinking about future. And see, the mentality of our younger generation, they're trying to do too many things in a too short time. And they don't believe in going step by step. Mm. It's too much of stress. So that is one. And another thing is, we are looking at other risk factors, which are not conventional risk factors we know. That is smoking, excessive drinking, diabetes, high blood, physical inactivity. Mm. And all those things are known factors, right? And high cholesterol. Mm. And food habits have changed. And food products have changed. Today, even female, they were getting some protection against heart disease in the premenopausal age group. That is fading away. What is happening today? Women are also working like men. What you call it as menish women. Mm. So except for reproductive cycle, they are exactly working like. And today, children education has become mother's examination.
Yes.
And I think mothers are so much stressed. Even a kid, kindergarten or maybe grade 2, grade 3. And mothers are so tensed when a kid goes for examination. When kids' results are going to be announced, mothers is more stressed. And how many mothers we have seen, at least I can quote some example where they came with history of chest pain, palpitation, headache. And I asked, we checked everything, it's normal. Then she was telling, no, I am very much stressed because my son has appeared for examination. He did not get good marks. Then asked, which I was thinking whether it may be grade 10 or grade 12. Then she was telling LKG. So I think these are stress is playing an havoc, and food habits have changed. Air pollution is emerging as a new risk factor, pollution.
Yes.
So I think...
You're going to Delhi if you win.
Yeah.
That's going to be something that...
I think last year nearly 20 lakhs people in India have died due to air pollution. See, common man perception is air pollution causes only lung problems.
Yeah.
Bronchitis or some sort of, chronic obstructive lung disease, something like that. Air pollution is also an important enhancing risk factor for heart attack nowadays. Mm. So these are some of the things, and fatty liver, polycystic ovaries, hormonal imbalances, and even some rheumatoid arthritis. I think these are all, but still 15 to 20% do not have, they are fit and fine, then this thing. Regarding COVID, see, the prevalence of heart attack among the youngsters was pretty, I mean, it's increasing even pre-COVID also.
Okay.
So, post-COVID, during that acute phase of COVID, maybe there was some 5%, 6% increase in the prevalence of heart attack. But that effect lasts only for 1 year, 2 years. And also there was a debate whether vaccine has increased the incidence of heart attack. According to study, for every 10 lakhs vaccines, the heart attack has happened in only 4. 4 out of every 10 lakhs. That is very insignificant.
Minimal, yes.
I think this is how it has happened. But definitely, the food habits, food practices, and the lifestyle, and the stress, they are contributing factors.
You know, a lot of our food habits in most families are traditional food habits. I can understand where, you know, the new ones where you're eating burgers and pizzas and things like that and then not getting your exercise. So high carbohydrate content, processed food, which you had said. But there are others who you know that they turn around and say, oh, for generations we've been eating this. So what? So nothing happened to us. Why are you getting a heart attack? You know, so those things are also there. But the point is the earlier generations didn't have that stress, didn't have the pollution, didn't have all that. This generation has that. The point is that nobody goes for screening, for testing when you see the signs and symptoms because everybody's scared of going to the hospital. What will everybody say? You go to the hospital, oh, simply doctor will tell you to do so many tests, 10,000 rupees gone in tests. So they don't do that. So unless they're in a state of heart attack, nobody will go and check.
See, since burden of cardiovascular disease is so high in India, men above 35, women above 45 should have a medical checkup anniversary. We celebrate anniversaries,
yeah. Now,
wedding anniversary and all. I think this is where, I think men above 35, women above 45 should undergo a medical checkup anniversary.
So who should do that? Should it be a company, wherever you work, make it mandatory for them?
Yeah.
Because unless you do that, nobody is going to do it.
See, for example, for Indian civil service servants, IAS, IPS
yeah.
and all those. So there is a rule that after the age of 40, they should have a compulsory health checkup.
Even in the Army, Navy, Air Force,
yeah,
it's
even
there.
In Karnataka, we have introduced this for all public transport employees, so they are undergoing. Mm. I think it is mandatory that all government employees, or whether it is, or even private employees, they should undergo a checkup after the age of 35-40. That should be made compulsory. Otherwise, you can say we will hold back their promotion. We can hold back their, what do you call, incentives or whatever it is, or perks.
Because even like pilots have to undergo it. Everybody who are in these critical care jobs, they have to undergo it. But if it is made mandatory, but how will you get women to do it who don't attend offices, who are homemakers? How will they?
You have to create an awareness. See, prevention is better than cure. Precaution is still the best. So you have to create an awareness about the importance of food habits, importance of exercise, importance of stress management. From the school levels itself, maybe from grade 6 or grade 7, from that concept should come from that.
The other thing I wanted to ask you is about holistic health, alternative therapies. Now, can that all help as far as dealing with, critical issues like health issues are concerned? Or is it just a lifestyle change with that?
Yeah, lifestyle. See, there are non-medicine medicines. For example, walking in sunlight, then exercise. I'm talking about non-medicine. I'm just enumerating the list of non-medicine medicine.
Okay.
One is walking in sunlight, then regular exercise, then proper diet, and also intermittent fasting, then rest, fruits and vegetables, and dining with family members, and having good friends. Even friendship has got a lot of
stress
impact.
Stress busters.
Yeah, stress busters. And as you age, those who have got good friends, they live longer. There is very scientific data. Mm-hmm. Then meditation, then yoga, then gratitude, So these are things which are not in...
They're not in capsule form.
Yeah, not in capsule form, not in injection form. And they're all free and no side effects. So, and also, and many, I think the trend of modern day trend is they have everything, but they are not happy. They are not happy because not that they don't have many things. They are unhappy because they feel others are more happy, happier.
Right. Where will you get the time? Let me come back to politics now, since we began with politics. So towards the end, I'll ask you, where do you get the time to do all this? And especially now that you're entering into such a cutthroat kind of a line, will you get time to have the downtime with your family, with your friends?
See, when I was working in that institute as a director, hardly I used to spend time with the family. But at least I used to walk at least 10,000 steps a day. And 5,000 steps I used to walk in the hospital. That's why it negates the statement of white collar, because I used to walk 5,000 steps in the hospital. And I used to sit in my chamber, but more often I used to walk in the corridors of the hospital, going to the outpatient OPD. Department, going to the wards. And even I was doing, I used to see a lot of patients as a director. A lot of people used to ask me, Manjunath, you are a director, and why are you seeing so many patients? But because my passion is for profession, but I used to balance between my professional work and the administrative work beautifully. That's one. So now, after getting into politics, of course, because we are deeply into this campaigning process, now we are walking only around 5,000 steps, around 5,000 steps. And diet, wherever we go, we have to eat something, but we see to that we eat more fruits, more vegetables. Hydration is very important. It's pretty hot summer, hot and humid atmosphere.
Yeah.
So, and I was thinking post-retirement, at least I'm now finding some time to let me spend a little more time with the family, apart from doing some limited hours of professional work. But same time, this thing came.
Doc, in the kind of profession you are in, religion and caste doesn't play a role. When you want to hire a cardiologist, when you want to hire a nursing staff, paramedical staff, their caste and their religion will not matter. But you are entering a field where caste and religion matters a lot. Unfortunately, it still plays a very strong role.
No, it depends on your mindset, actually. Whichever party, whichever way are there. If your basic mindset is because we love everybody, we respect everybody, it all depends on individual, the way you look at the things.
Are you going to mold yourself into the party mold, or is the party going to take you and mold as theirs? How does that work? The reason I'm asking you is because when a professional gets a non-professional, a politician gets into party politics, it's hard to make that shift. It's not very easy to be malleable and to become a professional politician. How will you do
it? Yeah, let me balance both. Let me have an equilibrium between the both. And certainly, we have to balance. Although I am into politics, I will not do a conventional politics. So, I think I have to balance both. I think in every political system, there are some people with some special qualities. So, not necessarily. And I don't want to criticize anybody for just a reason, because it's my culture. And people say, Manjunath, you are very soft-spoken, your attitude is very soft, whether you really fit into...
Yeah, even my cameraman was saying that the mic has to be brought closer to you because you're very soft-spoken.
Yeah. But just being soft is not a weakness. See, throughout my career, I certainly agree I'm very soft-spoken, but I'm soft in approach but firm in decisions. I'm soft in approach but firm in decision. And that's the reason I could able to bring some reforms. Indian Institute of Management, London School of Economics, they have said Dr. Manjunath model as an administrator in a public heart institute is worth emulating by other institutions in the country.
Would you encourage, finally, my last question to you is, would you encourage more professionals to get into public service? Do you think that our political system can benefit, like in Singapore, say, you know, where you have, where the political parties invite people from all walks of life to come and become part of public service?
Yeah, I think it depends on political will also. Mm-hmm. It all depends on the political leadership. See, for example, Honorable Prime Minister Narendra Modi, see, he is encouraging people who are good in their profession, who have got some expertise in their field. He is picking up some people, for example, external affairs or even in railways or even in finance. So it all depends on political parties, political will, whether they are going to encourage such sort of a people. Mm-hmm. So we have to choose that way. So not every political party will encourage professionals.
Right. Thank you very much and wishing you all the best, and hope you bring the probity which you had in your professional career, you bring that into politics. We look forward to seeing you in the parliament.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for watching or listening to this edition of the ANI podcast with Smita Prakash. Do click on the subscribe button. Namaste. Jai Hind.